It's whooping crane hatching season. In the past, the first thing Wisconsin's captive raised chicks saw when they opened their eyes was a human in a crane costume.
This year is different. For the first time, chicks bred in captivity will learn from an actual adult whooping crane how to act like a crane. This is part of a partnership that hopes to reestablish a migratory population of whooping cranes east of the Mississippi River.
With us now is Anne Lacey, crane research coordinator with the International Crane Foundation. Anne, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, thank you.
Well, let's talk about how these chicks imprint, I guess is the word. Why are we changing from the human in the big crane costume to the actual adult cranes?
Oh, I wish it was as easy to explain in a few sentences as that, but I'll try to boil it down to the fine points. They're in continually trying to learn more about how these birds learn and how we can make them successful parents in the future. Basically, it was decided, you know what, let's try something more natural. And, you know, this whole process is semi-artificial. You know, these are birds that are bred in captivity. They are all products of captive birds. And so instead of trying to be a crane parent in a costume, we thought, you know what, we have great crane pairs here at our facility in Baraboo, and we also have a partner, the U.S. Geological Service has a research facility in Patuxent, Maryland, and they also have a very large population of whooping cranes in captivity. So those two institutions and also the Calgary Zoo up in Canada are all contributing parent-raised birds for Wisconsin reintroduction this year. So it's been done as a pilot for the past 3 years, and we just decided this year we're going to see what a cohort of all parent-raised chicks will do.
Unfortunately, we have to
wait about 5 years to see see how they might be as parents, but we're optimistic.
What kinds of questions do you want to answer as you embark on this new part of the journey?
Well, I think it really boils down to, we need to make this a sustainable population. That is, the bottom line of success is this population self-sustaining? They make more of themselves out in the wild. So we don't have to hatch eggs. We don't have to do artificial insemination for genetic variability and supplement. And if they can do it themselves, it's a success. So that hasn't been happening yet. And we're 15 years into the project, you know, and it takes 5 years to even get to the point where they are nesting. So it's still a very, very young project when it, you know, comes down to it. These are long-lived birds, and it takes them a long time to get that experience to be able to be parents. And so we do have birds, they're pairing, they're getting territories, they're nesting, they're laying fertile eggs, but we have a hard time now with them getting chicks out on the landscape. It takes about 90 days from the time that it hatches until it's fully fledged. And that's a pretty risky time, of course. It's there on the ground, and there's predators out there, and there's disease issues and all sorts of things. So that's the really big thing, you know, and we have no idea if, as people in costume, are we teaching them wrong things, but what are we missing? You know, there's real subtleties that real cranes can teach chicks when they're with them 24/7. And so I think that's the big thing right now, is maybe we'll try something different to see if these birds will be different parents and if they can get chicks to fledge.
I mentioned a hatching season a few moments ago. As I understand it, most of them actually hatched in June. Is that right? And so where are the newest hatchlings in their development right now?
Well, we had a good season, and we had 26 pairs of whooping cranes that hatched 23 chicks in total. So that was a very good year. But we only have three that we know of on the landscape right now. And they're all generally in the vicinity of Nisida National Wildlife Refuge. Because the first 10 years of the project, all of the birds were released in that area. That's the area that they called home, and so then they returned there, and that's where they set up their territories. So that's why most of the nesting birds are in that area. And so with those three that are fledged right now, they're near or at fledging about right now. So yeah, they hatched out about the end of May, early June is about the time frame.
We're talking with Anne Lacey right now, crane research coordinator with the International Crane Foundation, looking at some new ways to rear and raise whooping crane chicks. It used to be a person in a crane costume, and now it's going to be actual adult whooping cranes themselves. And Anne, what kinds of numbers would reassure you? Again, this is for down the road, not for the immediate future. But what kinds of numbers would reassure you that this is working and there is some sort of subtlety in these adult sort of parents or caregivers that are doing better than the humans did?
Yeah, it's hard because of the small numbers. So a statistician will tell you that it's really hard to get any definitive answers when you have so few, and we have a rare species here. And so what is that number? We do have a baseline that is assigned by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and they are kind of the overseers of this, being a federally endangered species. They are the ones that we all answer to. So they have a number of individuals in the population, number of breeding pairs that ideally that we would like in the population. And we have that right now. And so, you know, ideally we would want more than 10 to 12% of the chicks fledging every year. Something more like 25, 30% would be ideal. I mean, that would be more natural. Certainly, it will never have the ability to fledge 100% of all the wild hatch chicks. That just doesn't happen. So, you know, we would want something more closer to 25%. That would make us feel much, much better about the situation.
I know the hatching efforts and the fledging efforts are just part of the story here. How are things looking in efforts to make sure that whooping cranes, as they migrate and build that migration route, have habitat they need and that they aren't hunted, they aren't shot along the way, which I know has been an obstacle in the past?
Yeah, and we do want to make sure that we don't confuse hunting with poaching. With whooping cranes, of course, being an endangered species, there is no place that they can be hunted. Mm-hmm. And we, especially in Texas and in the central flyway, where the original whooping crane population flies through, there is extensive sandhill crane hunting in many states, but there's also extensive hunter education to make sure that everybody knows the difference between these two species, between lookalikes with whooping cranes. Say snow geese are white with black wingtips, for example. So we're instituting that also in the eastern flyway, but also trying to go more of a community pride route. There's lots of crane festivals up and down both the eastern flyway and the central flyway, and we really want to make people aware that they have this incredibly rare species in their community. And by building up that pride, that also might trickle down to people who see this as a form of entertainment, plinking big white objects out in a field. And so we're really hoping that kind of interaction in the community level will help curtail some of this poaching incidents, because it really has an effect on, again, this is a really rare species. There's only about 100 birds flying in the eastern flyway alone. And so every adult that's taken out of that population really, really hurts our efforts at sustainability.
And you said this program of rearing the chicks with a person in a whooping crane costume outfit was 15 years old. Is there anything bittersweet for you about ending this, having that kind of involvement for your staff ending?
Well, I think that our aviculturists some of those techniques working in costume were pioneered here at the Crane Foundation, but there's 14 other species of crane out there, and quite a few of them are endangered, and we don't raise them all here at the Crane Foundation, but in other places in the world, they still do those kind of things. So we have international colleagues that we help with those techniques, and there is another population of whooping crane in North America that is being reintroduced in Louisiana. So that's a non-migratory population. And we are still raising them in costume. It enables us to raise a larger cohort if we're people out there caring for them in costume. And so it's still a good technique for that. And the Louisiana population is still building itself up. So we haven't shed the costume altogether. And even in the eastern flyway, we haven't decided that we'll never, ever use the costume ever again. This year we're concentrating on a parent reared release, but we'll keep thinking about this and using different techniques and mixing and matching, and so that costume may very well come back for that too.
You mentioned these hatchlings are in Nisida now, but how much of the process still happens at your headquarters, the International Crane Foundation in Baraboo?
Oh, quite a bit of it, quite a bit. Yeah, between the birds that contribute genetic material, the eggs that we produce here, some of them we ship out to our partners at Patuxent. Likewise, our partners at Calgary ship eggs here to hatch, and we use our captive birds to incubate. Even if they aren't parent-rearing them, we use some of our captive birds to incubate, because that increases the hatchability of eggs. So quite a bit of it happens here, and we also have staff that go out and monitor the population. So once they're out there and meandering the landscape, we do a lot of monitoring to troubleshoot and make sure that they're all okay, and that helps with the adaptive management. What exactly are they doing that's maladaptive that we can then change things? And so most of the wild hatch chicks are still at Nisida, but we have hopes that our new release area in the Horicon and White River Marsh area in the east central part of the state, in the coming years, those breeding birds will come online, and maybe they'll have different fledging success over there.
And just briefly as we wrap up, obviously as we're talking about these whooping cranes, they're still very rare, but if we want to see them, we can see them at the International Crane Foundation, correct?
Absolutely. One of 15 species of crane, and this is the only place in the world that you can see all 15. And you can go to any number of the wildlife refuges or wildlife areas in Wisconsin and have a pretty good chance of seeing a rare bird.
Anne, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, it was my pleasure. Thank you.
That was Anne Lacy, Crane Research Coordinator with the International Crane Foundation.
Coming up, August is just around the corner. Summer only lasts another month or so. And now we want to hear from you. What would you like to do before the summer ends? Take a trip? Visit a friend, try something new.
You can call us and let us know what you want to do, what's still on your list. You've got a month. Still got time to get some of these things crossed off your list, but let us know what you'd like to do at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page.